Hey, have you found a way of tackling that kind of manic busyness that really doesn't see you get very much done? What have your strategies and techniques been to try to, contain the out of control bits of your busy life, things like the email or whatever that just seem to be able to take over and leave you very busy but not achieving a lot? 1300 222 702 is the number. I'd love to talk to you about that this morning on 702 ABC Sydney Mornings. It's a constant problem, of course. Depths of demand's doom is what my next guest calls it. So, all well and good, I suppose, to be told that you can take back control and you have to set limits and all that sort of thing, but how do you do it? Well, Tony Crabb is my next guest. He's the author of a book called Busy. He's a business psychologist and he tours the world talking to very large corporations about this phenomenon. Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Linda.
We all say we are hellishly busy all the time. It's your job to tell us how to deal with it. But let's start with the idea of being busy at work. Is it the reality that we are all so busy that we're being crushed?
So, I mean, there's very few people I meet today. I mean, it's almost a joke, isn't it, that everyone that you meet within 30 seconds of introducing yourself or within saying hi will use the word busy. We're all tell each other we're busy all the time. We all believe we're busy all the time. And so we know busy is bad and we know there's a lot to do, but are we really busy because there's too much to do? Now, my view is there is too much to do. I mean, undeniably there is too much to do. But are we busy because of that? Now, I think actually a lot of our busyness is a brand where we like to compete. We almost get into this. In the UK, there used to be this thing that after a holiday, you'd show each other, you'd roll up your arm, your sleeves, and you'd compare how brown you were to prove how good your holiday had been. The equivalent of that in the 21st century is we compare how big our inboxes are when we get home. We say, oh, I came back for 3,000 emails. So there's a brand piece that we like to do that. I think there's also an addiction piece. We've got to ask ourselves, how long does it take us to check our email first thing in the morning? For a lot of people, it's 30 seconds. Mm. And so there's an addictive element. And there's also, I think there's a part of busyness that's avoidance. Linda Stone did some interesting research recently where she found that people are happiest when they're doing the mundane task, the ticking off list, feeling like some kind of task ninja. But actually, there's a kind of avoidance there because what we're avoiding is the stuff that will make our career successful, the stuff that will make us happy, the stuff that will make us thrive in the longer term. So yes, we're busy because there's too much to do, or yes, there's too much to do, but the reasons we're busy are a bit deeper. The reasons we're busy are for more personal reasons. And I think because we're partly to blame for our busyness, we can then do things about it.
Okay, one of the things you say in your book, which is called Busy, How to Thrive in a World of Too Much, is you say the starting point for saying an effective no is saying yes. And when I read that, I said to myself, huh? How can that be?
No can sometimes be viewed as a purely negative thing. But actually, what we've got to realize is whenever we say yes, especially when we're really busy, we're actually saying no to something else. And we often say yes because we want to avoid an argument, because it's just easier that way. And again, to this point of avoidance. And yet, actually, in the very act of saying yes to something at work, we say no to something that may be important. And what I'm finding is when we get busy, the very stuff that we give up on because we're justify it with being terribly busy, the very stuff we give up on is the stuff that's most important to us.
So the children's birthdays and that sort of thing.
Well, so it might be key birthdays. It might be our values. It might be our hobbies. It might be just actually being fully present with the people that we love. It might be the major breakthrough project that we're doing that we end up putting off forever because we're constantly distracted and pushed away from things, so therefore we don't make impact. Mm. And so one of the things that I find helps people to have the courage, if you like, to say no, is when they're really clear of the yes that they're saying to. So what is it? What's the big thing that really means something to you, or indeed really means something to your organization, that you're saying yes to, which is the reason that therefore that you're saying no to this less important task.
It's difficult to sort those sometimes, isn't it? Especially if you're put on the spot. The boss comes up and says, say for example, in my business, in broadcasting, the boss comes up and says, there's an election coming up and we need you to run off to this this part of the city to you know, do a program. And you go, oh, okay. It's hard sometimes to step back, isn't it, and assess the weight of everything.
It really is. And assertiveness doesn't mean quick thinking. And sometimes we actually say yes just because we couldn't think of anything better to say. Or we make up some spurious excuse, like my long-lost cousin is coming into town with his three-legged dog that's dying of cancer. Or it's okay to say, in a situation like that where you're thrust on something, can you give me a minute to think about that? Mm. My mother-in-law is fabulous at that. And she just said, give me a minute. She'd go away and think about it. And then she'll think about how she's going to say no if that's what she wants to say.
Right.
Now, clearly, that's not always possible. But and there are times when, quite frankly, we have to say yes and we have to put our own stuff on hold in that particular time. But it's when it's persistent patterns and when actually a lot of the time that you're saying yes, when really it would be better actually for the organisation as well as your own life to say no. And in those situations, we just have to make sure that we're not confusing assertiveness for quick thinking.
Tony Crabb is with me. He's a business psychologist and has some very practical advice in his book about how to survive a world where we're all so busy. The book is called Busy. Organisations sometimes are also, you know, not the best at figuring out what's best for them. So if we as individuals struggle with how to order things and the organisation feels like it's struggling, I mean, who should be taking charge here?
I think we're all grappling with it. I mean, the work I do stems from sort of chief executive down, and the reality is whether I'm speaking to an entry-level salesperson or a chief exec, we're all struggling with actually it's remarkably similar how consistent those conversations are. The reality is a lot of this stuff isn't rocket science, but it's about saying, making some tough choices about how we prioritize. And one of the simple things around that is one of the things I think is one of the biggest problems in the way we work and our effectiveness is time management. I think time management is part of the problem rather than the cure, but we beat ourselves up and have this fantasy that if only we got a bit more organized, we'd get on top of it all. And it's just a lie. It's impossible. And it leads to a sense of helplessness, as opposed to what we really should be doing is making choices, making tough choices at times, but making choices and recognizing that every time we're crazily busy, we're unchoosing something else. And actually, you could argue that the whole of business is just an inability to make choices over one thing that's important versus another thing that's easier and immediate. I mean, in one way, you could argue, or one of the things that I say, I don't think I actually say it in the book, but one of the things I often say is effectively email has become the TV of work.
Mm.
So it's kind of, you know, a lot of our kind of rampant productivity is just the same as when we flop at home in front of the TV. It's not really very satisfying, but it kind of passes the time.
Mm. Yes, I wanted to ask you about email because it is the scourge. I mean, here in our organisation, everybody complains about the email inbox being full every single day, and yet it doesn't seem to be a very productive part of our day. Would you argue that we should maybe ignore our emails on the odd occasion?
Absolutely, and we most certainly shouldn't let email determine our thought process. We should dip in and dip out of email, and it's good to kind of crunch through email at times, but the reality is it shouldn't set your agenda, and there are too many people who come to work with great intentions, and then they open their inbox, and all of a sudden, bosh, all the good intentions of things that were going to be important and valuable just get put aside as they go through email after email after email. And they think that, you know, they have this sort of lovely sense because dopamine's released. They have this lovely sense of, well, I'm being terribly effective because they're going through loads of email. But the reality is they're not really doing anything. And it's just we're all creating, as we send more and more email, we're all just making it harder for everyone else. And it's not delivering the kind of impact that we can do if we're actually able to focus. So at the very least, we need to learn to switch off our devices to give us time to focus a little bit more.
Tony Crabb is my guest, author of Busy. In a moment, I'll ask him about haggling.
How much, quick? What? It's for the wife.
Oh, 20 shekels.
Right.
What?
There you are.
Wait a minute. What? Well, we're supposed to haggle.
No, I've got to get...
What do you mean, no?
I haven't got time.
Well, give it back then.
No, I just paid you.
What?
Yeah.
This bloke won't haggle.
Won't haggle?
All right.
Do we have to?
Now, look, I want 20 for that.
I just gave you
20. Now, are you telling me that's not worth 20 shekels?
No.
Look at it. Feel the quality. That's not in your goat.
All right, I'll give you 19 then.
No. Come on, do it properly.
What?
Haggle properly. This isn't worth 19.
You just said it was worth 20.
Oh, dear.
And whether it's necessary when negotiating with our bosses, if you ought to be haggling in that scenario. But I want to hear from you. Are you unnecessarily busy? And have you taken matters into your own hands to try to wrestle back your time? 1-300-222-702 is the number. Tony, one of the things you say in your book is if you're negotiating with your bosses, if you're in a discussion with your company and your corporate environment about what needs to be done, projects, programs, whatever, you say improve your offer and your control and your choices will also improve. What do you mean by that?
Make yourself more valuable. The people who have more to offer will get more opportunities to negotiate. I mean, you know, in every organization, you see people who've negotiated win wonderful things or great kind of lifestyles or whatever it is that's important to them. But because they're very good, and by very good, it means that they have impact. They've differentiated themselves. They stand out from the crowd. And again, that comes back to the basic point that to stand out from the crowd and to differentiate, you have to actually have time to focus on really important things so you can make a difference. And all that happens when we're in frenetic busyness is we kind of fade into the background. We just, in this whirl of trying to get everyone happy, we never actually achieve anything apart from what a horrible percentage of people believe when they get home is, well, I've emptied my inbox, therefore I've been productive. Actually, you've achieved nothing really apart from feed the machine. So making ourselves valuable comes from delivering things of worth, and that only happens through giving ourselves time to immerse ourselves, to go deep. The brain just doesn't work in a constant hopscotching between things.
At the start of this, I introduced you by playing a little bit of Monty Python, the scene from The Life of Brian about the haggling in the marketplace. You know, hang on, you can't just pay what I've told you it costs. You have to haggle. In negotiations with bosses, do you have to haggle?
We all haggle at times. But what I find is a much more fruitful way of having negotiations about things, particularly when it comes to working lifestyles, is when you try and meet both parties' needs. So you actually, rather than focus on the position, I want this, you want that, you actually try and think of, so what are you trying to achieve? What am I trying to achieve? So the simple example I would give on that is, you know, you come home from a conference, you're exhausted, but it's been about work-life balance. And so you think, tell you what I need to do, I need to get healthier, so I'm going to go out for a two-hour run. You get back to your husband or your wife who's been looking after the kids for 3 days and says, no chance, I need a break from the kids, I'm off to go and see my friends. Now, we could get into a situation where we both talk about our positions. I talk about, I want to go for a run. You talk about, no, you're staying in because I'm going out with my friends. And that just leads to a row. There's nowhere we're going to go with that if we focus on our positions, which is what we started with. If instead we get into a conversation which is about the underlying need that we're both trying to meet, so I have a desire to get healthier and fitter. My partner would absolutely agree with that. The other person, my partner has a desire to just relax because of the kids. I would totally agree with that. We can then have a fruitful conversation over, based on agreement, over what we can do. In any negotiation, try and go beyond the I must have X to what's their underlying need, what are they trying to achieve, and what am I trying to achieve? And if you can understand the underlying need, you can much more readily find a solution that works for both parties and enable a bit of creativity in the process rather than just a simple haggle. It's not the most effective way, certainly for a work-life balance conversation, which is always a bit more complex and a bit more values laden.
Yeah. One of the things you mentioned is that we go to the workplace with a continuing sort of industrial age mentality, and so much has changed around us. Are we adapting, or are we sort of stuck in a past way of thinking about work?
We're stuck in a past. We all still go to an office every day. And what's that all about? We don't need to go into offices. As I said, in the industrial age, the differentiator was productivity. Who could produce the most? And now the Nomura Institute even say we're not even in the information age anymore. We're in something they call the creative era, which is the only form of competitive advantage is going to come from the organizations that can create and innovate faster. And I would apply that to individuals as well and say that success doesn't come from producing a lot. We've got too much of everything already. Success is going to come increasingly from the most scarce resource at the moment, which is attention. Who can grab attention? And I don't mean through some spurious, constant sort of self-promotion, but I mean through doing things that are genuinely interesting, genuinely eye-catching, genuinely making a difference to the organization. And therefore differentiating yourself through that. And I think that's the mental shift. If we stay in the I succeed by working harder, and I think that's part of where our brand of busy comes from, because we think it's a good thing. Deep down, we think being busy is a good thing. It's a sign of our worth. We've got to move away from that and say, look, we're no longer in a world of scarcity. We're in a world of too much and infinite abundance. So therefore, I need to relate differently to it. I need to think, how does the marketplace work now? How does technology work? And find a different way of orienting ourselves to that. And that involves taking control of devices. And I'm a big fan of technology, by the way. I love my devices. I love my kit. But it can't control me. It can't set my agenda. It can't make me less good at thinking. Now, we know that through people being constantly plugged in, the brain shrinks. When something called the allostatic load that kicks in when people are always plugged in, that makes them much more likely to have all kinds of health problems. There's a lot of downsides of the way we're currently living with technology, but on a more simple level, I actually think it's making us much less successful. You know, if there was one thing I really hope comes out of the book, I'd really like people, when they meet each other, to be slightly embarrassed to admit they're busy, rather than rather proud. I think if that happened, I would be thrilled, because I think we should be slightly embarrassed to be too busy.
That's sort of where we meet the clash between older generations of workers and the way that Gen Y works. It's a really interesting interface, that one, and that kind of exemplifies what you're talking about, I think. Tony, it's been great to spend some time with you. Thank you very much for the book, which is called Busy, How to Thrive in a World of Too Much. Tony Crabb, thank you.
My pleasure. My very great pleasure.